No.
No.
Are you pursuing medicine lecture today on kidney function? And it's reading over, and the phone one piece quite beautiful. The lecturer at the time was talking about the sodium balance in the body, and the point he made basically was that in certain circumstances the body gets dehydrated very, very slowly, and that the normal sodium level would be about 140 to 150 in the normal person. But that sometimes over maybe a person can get dehydrated over a few weeks, so the sodium would drop very, very slowly to maybe 110. So as a doctor, if you see sodium 110, it's like, oh shit, you know, that's something really tricky. So, but he was basically making the point that in nature, disturbances can occur very gradually, and if these disturbances are going to get better, then they get better very slowly. So even though there might be a vast disturbance and urge to fix it very, very quickly, that just to appreciate that in nature these disturbances can occur gradually, so they should be expected. So I just thought it was a lovely analogy to maybe a change you want to bring about in yourself or in someone else, particularly when it's very obvious that change needs to take place. Thanks very much.
To Anne-Marie again, that was just an immense joy to hear your work. It was one of the loveliest experiences I've had for a long time, and thanks.
You're here.
This is a little whimsical thing called Seven Plays. Having failed to come to terms with an inconvenient truth, earthlings may yet sink beneath the seas that they pollute. The temperature is rising, the ice caps in retreat, but we can't step off the planet when people feel the heat. Toxic debt has clogged up the previous cash flow in the bank. The wheels fell off the gravy train, and we all blamed the Yanks. What some read in the New York Times nearly made them choke. Paul Krugman's chilling article doomed Erin to go broke. A third plague looms, as dirty swine are propagating flu. The medics say they've got it stopped. We wonder if they do. The Bible tells of seven plagues that Egypt had to bear. Cheer up, with only four to go, we're nearly halfway there.
This is a prose piece. It's about Cove, County Cork. We were just discussing it outside. It's a little town at the end of the train line, not far from here. There is a pub on the main square of Cove called the Lusitania. Above it, in a window, slightly faded letters painted on the glass announce in disco font, Lusitania Art Gallery, inquire within. Aoife was interested, so we entered the pub, passing a man and a woman who barred the way in by standing in the doorway, as is customary in Cove. and spoke to the barman about the gallery. He told us it belonged to a woman, Dolores, whose phone number he pointed out on a sign hung on a post beside the bar. He said, "She's not here. I don't know when she'll be back. You can give her a call." He paused. "Is it just that you want to see the place?" Aoife answered, "Yes." He said, "Well, I have permission to show the place. Would you like to go up and see it?" We walked behind him up a dark flight of stairs, carpeted with fireproof commercial carpet. The banister was of old wood, and the steps creaked a little. About halfway up, a sticky patch on the banister left a disagreeable impression on my fingers. The barman led us into a room about the size of his pub, carpeted with the same blue carpet as the stairs, and bright with the light from two large windows. There were many artworks hung on the walls or propped up in various places, most notably some large portraits of gnarly old men. A pair of aluminum cafe tables was set up in a corner, and an oriental rug was kind of rolled up in another corner, presumably as a couch. The carpet was stained with paint in many places, and a very professional-looking easel was set up near the door with a work in progress set upon it, depicting a bearded old man with a seafaring look, and a few photographs of the subject propped up against it. As we were inspecting the work, the barman said to us, "He's a character. They're all characters. You could see any of these guys around town now. She was interested in their faces." The artworks were painted in a style similar to that of Van Gogh, with thick daubs of paint forming a kind of textured surface. The cheeks and foreheads had a wrinkled, folded appearance, like coral or sponges, sometimes embossed with thick, ropey veins. "This man," he said, pointing to a portrait of an old man with shoulder-length hair, gazing intently at a cigarette held in his long, fine, misshapen fingers. "She was interested in him because of the color of his face. He was a regular here, and his face really was that color." "Kind of ashen," I suggested. "Well, they used to call him Sooty," replied the barman. "He lived in an unheated house, and heated it with the fireplace. And he would fall asleep in front of the fireplace. That's how his skin got to look that way. Kind of a gray hue," I mused. "It was after his mother passed away that he really let himself go," said the barman. "While she was alive, he wore a white shirt every day. And you could shave your face with the collar of that shirt. It was so stiff." "Is he still around?" asked Aoife. "No, he's dead about 2 years now. He lived up on the hill behind the cathedral. He used to come in here every day for a pint or two, and then he would go straight home. He had his food delivered by Meals on Wheels. The driver would leave his food hanging on the door, and one day the driver saw that he hadn't picked up his food in 3 days. So the driver came down to see me, and we went up together to the house, and we kicked in the door. And there he was, the poor man, dead a week." I pictured the scene to myself as he was telling it, and speculated over why was he a barman, and not the police or the hospital, who had been called by the Meals on Wheels guy to witness this grave event.
Additional significance that it's the last orders. So after this, there could be dehydration. Rosie O'Regan is now going to speak.
I've done this one once before, but today I'll do it again for the last It's called The Music Place. A person can be lost and fall into place without a trace of confusion. The space found in an instant as they foot from their grounding while nimble fingers glide, stringing and singing their belonging. The fullness of the moment. That moment where music lifts the lute and there is no hiding, and you do not shy away. And just like that, you are right where you're meant to be. And the music plays, the music plays.
Now calling James Foley.
You buy me a pint of sympathy, trying to return of late into your barricading arms. Sorrow is not a problem, as you say, in a thick ice of the dance floor. For want of looking closely, I believe everything to be true. We are not here to enjoy ourselves, as I said, worshipping an incandescent idol. The wearing of charms was not sufficient, as was the bearing of arms. Taking on ideologies more on a burning god, a light on my manifesto. Counting bones the traditional way, sucking the marrow out of existence, the incandescent treat that God gives us, and an attitude to destroy grey matter, to understand no brainer again. This one's called the Alabaster Saint. Permanent funds was the way to go. Etched in alabaster to firm a smile to attend the glory of God or the constant shuffle of mortals at designated times. Yet I, sallow, indifferent, have seen and have remembered the slaves of time congregate such as we. Sunken eyes, etched crypts, births, deaths, marriages, on your tent of longevity, my stony smock has seen it all. You could do with reformation yourself, of time stripping off guilt, colour, pigment, bare blushes, grandeur, laughing indifference at your creator, hammering and chiseling your future, but mark my words, you're never a Disney. Thank you. This one is called Stop Taking. Our hearts are not built of bliss rather than the ridicule of those we love or the stark quality of what we are not, simply guardians of our own making. Kissing the long arm of a private love, blotted out by acres of Chardonnay, among other things, why should I be contrite? Why should I be the one to turn off the light, crawling out of bed to do so? The night is always cold regardless of how the stars and the hearts go awry. Ignorance is no longer a sin nor a offense, as we love to see ourselves go for the comfort of our own homes, or the quality of stars in our minds. The structure is supported by complacency. Why should I be contrite to this? Thank you.
This is it's just a little continuation of my chronicles of Maybe going over a very brave school teacher in a very difficult situation. And last week, you may remember, the inspector had come to the school and made the mistake of trying to leave the classroom at the same time as the children, and he ended up a bit squashed. So anyway, dear principal, May writes, well, 10 p.m. I am now with 2 W. W does not stand for wonderful, by the way, or wizards. It stands for woodwork, in case you didn't know. Now, the class started 10 minutes ago, but there's no sign of the inspector. He arranged to come to me for this class just before we both went into the previous class, 3M. I wonder where he could have got to. I wonder if he has changed his mind. That would be understandable, admittedly. Most unprofessional, wouldn't it? I mean to say. 12:20, still no sign of his nibs. I'm beginning to suspect he won't be coming at this late stage. I do hope he is all right. I wonder if his being nearly crushed by the pupils as he was trying to leave the classroom at that ill-advised time could have anything to do with his failure to turn up. Surely not. A man like that must be used to the cut and thrust of life. He's bound to have nerves of steel being in the presence of teenagers every day. 12:30. Life in the classroom is continuing as normal. No one is doing a blessed bit of work, of course. The waste paper basket is full of paper airplanes and rolled up bits of paper. James O'Mara is carving something for posterity on his desk. I successfully removed Jason from the lampshade on which he was swinging. Mm-hmm. Threatening to turn on the power was a masterstroke. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I thought of that. Mm-hmm. 12:36. Still no inspector? If I ever convert these letters into a book, I know what I shall entitle this episode, namely, An Inspector Doesn't Call. The children are smirking behind their hands all the time and giving each other known looks. There's something going on. I just know it. there's some kind of conspiracy in the air. I wonder if it could have anything to do with the inspector? 1238? I've just heard muffled cries coming from the toilet just next to the classroom, and a kind of vague pounding on the wall. I wonder what it could be. It's most mysterious. Who could be in there? Should I investigate, I wonder? 1243. I think I will. Your ever resourceful teacher, Maisie Gogol. Dear Principal, great news! I have located the inspector. I was just in time. He was a little disgruntled as he sat there in one of the cubicles, but as soon as I released him from the clutches of the school ties that had been used to bind and gag him, he began to improve rapidly. His face was quite red and his heart was beating madly, and he could only speak gibberish for about 5 minutes. I didn't mind that too much. I'm used to pupils speaking gibberish to me all the time. It's an occupational hazard. I must admit I was afraid that I might lose him at first. Purple veins were standing out in his forehead, and his eyes were all red and spinning all around in his head. I must say, on the positive side, he presented quite a colourful spectacle. I was not overly concerned until he stopped moving. At this point, I must say I became quite grateful that I am such an avid fan of Eeyore on television. I used to love Marcus Welby as well, by the way, but they just don't make them like that anymore, do they, Wiggy? Anyway, I remember seeing how they use shock treatment to revive people. Heart failure. Having no electric equipment to hand, I thought for a moment I could stick his finger in the socket in the wall, but I decided not to waste time pursuing this button. Most of the sockets in the school don't work anyway. Besides, I didn't want to cause a power failure in the school. There are enough failures sitting in the desk. In the end, I decided to do a manual version of the operation, and climbing up onto the inspector's chest, I stamped up and down with my right foot. It was an unorthodox procedure, I know, but you would be surprised at how quickly the inspector revived after my little medical version of river dance. I think he was a little surprised when he gained consciousness to find me standing on top of him and stamping on his chest, but I have no doubt that when he considered what he in fact owes to me for saving his life, his retrospective position on the matter was different substantially from his immediate one, which was to leap up, causing me to fall over, and to shout at me in language that, frankly, I wouldn't repeat even to you, Principal. Not until the Christmas party, anyway. Which is Maeve, teacher of French, English, good manners, life-saving martial arts,
it's for my dentist. I did read this I was at work two weeks ago, to my dentist. While he was sitting in his dentist chair, that took about 6 minutes. And basically, I went up to him with a loose crown about a month ago, and he started charging off my teeth to his assistant. The charging?
Yeah.
Really, he's just kind of looking at your teeth going, you know, this and that.
I know,
he's talking about
the same experience
as
well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it painful?
Yeah, boring.
Yeah, painfully boring. Fair enough. And I just thought it was very poetic, you know, just the way he was describing all his teeth. So I asked him if he would mind me recording it and that I'd write a poem. And he said, fine, so it's, you know, painless. I'm at my new dentist with a loose crown. He holds up the x-rayed future of my diet and orthopantographs of secrets to chart the teeth that shaped my every word. Upper right one, bridge retained. Memory sinks into the trembling nuclei of my own electricity, the shaman's drug, the ritual for visions and childhood seconds. Was ever pain the root of wisdom? Upper right two, pontic of a bridge. He smiles, yet the town of white. Well, you've certainly been on the block. If only you knew, Doc, what some horses have to go through for extensive occlusal wear. Upper right three, retainer of a bridge. At first appointment, I open wide expecting shock. I wait for something like, Jesus Christ Almighty. I muse on how they don't even blink, manage to avoid the right words. Upper right four, MOD composite. His deja vu posture conjures all of my very own dentists, flashing by now like needles. I can't remember exactly how many, yet only these strangers have ever seen my thoughts this closely, could somehow know me where most have not. Upper right five missing. I've had so many dentists that any nerves not removed by a pulpectomy have receded up into the safety of my nostrils, perhaps even my eyes and brain. Upper right six crown. I remember beaming up at a dentist in the Curragh when I was 8, thinking, wow, women are dentists too. An upper brace for a crooked incisor, just great. No school though, thanks to you. Upper right seven, core and crown. The perfume of prosthetics, amalgam, of that pink moulding powder, and the faint but distinctive superiority of dentist breath. Upper left one, distal angle. Switch off my nose, please. This time chair reminds me I've had so many root canals that I don't need anesthetic. Upper left two, distal angle. I've always loved my teeth, though something in my sleep would slowly grind the mind with the adventures of sweets. How many nights Dad would ease a dollop of sacred whiskey deep into an aching corner to float me endlessly, painlessly, tearlessly away. Upper left three missing. I remember a big city dentist whose posture leant over me at an angle slightly proportionate to my health cover. Upper left four, DO. Astutely aware of the minute hand movements, the variations in pressure, bracing for the jolt of steel slamming into a nerve. Upper left five, MOD and mobility. I exhume more buried treasure. A jackhammer vibrating brain cells. Perhaps if I defeated pain, then I wouldn't have to feel it again. Lower left 1-4 present. Wishing for a masochism button. Waiting for that drill to burst right through my cheek. And beyond, when pain becomes a friend, something must be wrong. Lower left 5, MOD amalgam. There's good news though, for one who never used to speak much. As telepathic powers increase exponentially, unfold. Lower left six missing. For the frustration of not being free to answer interesting conversation. Unable to nod. Primal sounds. Lower left seven, MO. A country dentist who for pocket change arranged a root canal and abscess bonus. Rough dentists. Most were gentle enough. lower right 1-3 quadrant. A distracted dentist who, while talking of goals, broke off the side of a wisdom, leaving me to swallow the blame. Who's going anywhere? Never mind, Doc. There's much more to worry about out there. Lower right 4 missing. I had the best of entertainment from dentists. A tiny dentist lady who once assumed an exotic yoga contortion to extract a stubborn molar. Knees and legs all over the place. Lower right 5 MO medial buccal composite. An up and close real live heroine she was, piercing my fantasy with the most clinical ice blue a woman could ever offer. Now that's education. Lower right 6 missing. I would have made a great dentist. One thing I always found odd though was the long drawn closeness of eyes. Details only a lover should know. Lower right 7 missing. They are all lost lovers. Each an image of fascination finely tattooed onto a chronology of painless recollections. They're better than any psychologist. I've learned psychology from dentists. Lower right 8, M.O. amalgam. As he finishes, I tip tongue along the peaks and crevices, valleys of gum, only Odysseus would dare. All these and more have witnessed my submolecular hero, who celebrates in slippery leaps from spinning to crown, his triumphant emergence, his victorious trophy, of mouthwash. They have all traced my life as casually as an old palm reader. I suddenly long to thank each one with a bright embrace. Painless as an x-ray,